morning. As most of you guys know, Justin, like Joe said, is on sabbatical, so we've had a bunch of guest speakers coming and speaking. This week is my week. Thank you. Get a fill-in for Justin. We're going to continue on with the Hall of Faith. We started with Noah. We talked about Abraham last week. And today, we're going to be talking about Jacob. So, everybody knows that walking through life is full of fun and difficult decisions. Sometimes we make the wrong ones, and sometimes we make the right ones. But no matter what, all of decisions that we make tend to be pretty hard. I want us to remember as we continue to go through this sermon series that these are real people. They're not just stories. They are living, breathing human beings that lived a while ago, and they made decisions the same way we make decisions, not knowing. They didn't have the advantage of reading their life ahead of time like we do in Genesis, reading about Jacob. So they're having a rough go of it just like we do. So they had fears, they had struggles, and they tried to get through life as best they could. So how often do we make decisions based on our own intuition, our own power? We do our best to make decisions based on biblical truth, but sometimes it just doesn't work out. How often do we get afraid of making those big decisions? How often do we not trust God when we know the promises of the Bible? And how do we act this out in our lives every day? When I was younger, I played a lot of golf. I was taught golf at an early age. And one thing about golf that you learn is there's a lot of rules. I started getting pretty good, and I played a lot of golf with my friends, with my parents. And when you're young, you get away with a lot more, and they give you these things called mulligans, or do-overs if you don't play golf, or sometimes if you hit it in the long grass, you can kind of prop your ball up to give yourself a better lie. But what I found was when you do get to a certain point of being good, you want to go play in competitions and test yourself against other people, they don't give those mulligans out anymore. It gets harder because you don't get a chance to make your lie better, you don't get a chance to do a do-over, and people hold you accountable. Every time you hit the ball, you have to take a stroke. So the older I got, the more competitions I played in, the more responsibility was put on me to be honest and adhere to the rules. Every stroke you take, even to the point of having to take a penalty if you make a mistake. And a lot of times in golf, it's a personal thing because nobody else knows that you made the mistake but you. And you have to call yourself out and take a penalty. When I made a mistake, I had to do that. But in golf, like life, there's always a temptation to break the rules. So our hero of the faith today, like anyone, makes some big mistakes. He tries to do things that he wants to do that he probably knows he ought not to. But God still uses all the mistakes in his life to shape him into a father of a nation. And he's recognized for his faith. So, how many of you know the story of Jacob? A few of you. Perfect. So, we're not going to tell the whole story this morning, or we're going to be here till about 3, maybe 4. So, we're just going to hit the high points. Personally, I've always wrestled with Jacob. I've never quite understood why God would continually bless a man who tends to just make hurtful decisions and willfully take advantage of people, even though he probably knows he shouldn't. But God is always there, and God calls him into the hall of faith anyway. But the more I read through Jacob and the more I prepped for this sermon, I started to empathize with him a little bit of, instead of seeing a man who was so worried about getting ahead, I see a man who was maybe motivated by fear. Maybe his upbringing influenced his decision making and how he might have justified his actions because he just didn't know any better. How many of us make mistakes because we're afraid? How many of us make mistakes because we didn't know any better? So today we're going to be going through the life of Jacob, how he started out as a man. He looks selfish and greedy, but God transforms him into a patriarch. So we make decisions as we go through life that are always in our own best interest. We do things to try to bring ourselves happiness. Our lives revolve around the choices that we make. How often does the world tell us, you're judged by how successful you are? You're judged by how much money you have. What power do you have in your position? The world says, be your own destiny. You control your future. But the reality is, as a Christian, we do what God tells us to do, and we make decisions that he gives us in order to not necessarily get ahead, but accomplish his purpose. Now, I don't think Jacob was all that different from us as we continue to dive into what he did and how he lived. I think he did his best to survive and thrive in a really hard, dangerous world. He used his talents as a smart and shrewd individual to get ahead, and he took advantage. When he saw a place to get ahead, he took advantage of it, even though it got him into trouble. So do we see a man when we look at Jacob that took advantage of people, or do we see a man that God delighted in and blessed? Why is Jacob in the Hall of Faith? Why did God delight in Jacob? How do we view ourselves in light of Jacob, if you've read the story of Jacob? And how are we living our best life now? Or are we trying to delight in God? So Jacob's story. Jacob is mentioned in Genesis 25 through 49. There's about 300 plus mentions of his name throughout the entire Bible. He's the grandson of Abraham, whom we talked about last week. I'm going to try to give you a broad overview of those 25 chapters. We're going to try to take the 30,000-foot view. But what I want you to do is, after this sermon, I want you to go back, and I want you to read Jacob, and I want you to really dive in, and I want you to pay attention to the details of his life, because there's a lot more than that I just don't have time to cover. So Jacob was born the grandson of Abraham. He had a twin brother. His name was Esau. Isaac and Rebekah were his parents. Now, Rebekah's mother had trouble getting pregnant, a family issue, as we talked about last week. But when she didn't get pregnant, she was wondering what the problem was. And then when God finally revealed that she was going to get pregnant, he spoke to her and he said, there are two nations in your womb. God said, one twin is going to be stronger than the other one, and the older is going to serve the younger, which in Jewish culture is completely backwards. So the text tells us in chapter 25 that Jacob and Esau were struggling with each other even in the womb. When they were born, Esau came out first, and Jacob came out grasping the heel of his brother. And as they grew up, the sibling rivalry continued. Favoritism in the family was rampant. Jacob's father loved Esau more because he had skills as a hunter. And Jacob's mother, Rebekah, loved Jacob more. So you can already see from the womb and the favoritism that they were born into conflict, and playing favorites made even more division. So one of the first stories that we read about Jacob and Esau is in chapter 25, verse 29 through 34. And it shows how these two boys interacted with each other. It says, once when Jacob was cooking stew, Esau came in from the field and he was exhausted. And Esau said to Jacob, let me eat some of that red stew, for I'm exhausted. Therefore, his name was called Edom. And Jacob said, sell me your birthright now. Esau said, I'm about to die. Of what is use of what use is the birthright to me? So Jacob said, swear it to me now. So he swore it to him and sold him the birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew and ate and drank and rose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. So this story has been dissected and talked about by so many theologians and scholars that my description is not going to do it justice. But you can see the dysfunction. Like, you can just see that this was not a good relationship. Why didn't Jacob just give him some food if he was hungry? Why was there a price? Later on, Isaac, their father, moves the family to Gerar, the land of the Philistines. Both the boys are growing up. They're men now. Isaac starts to realize that he's old and that he's starting to go blind. The custom of that time was the father would bless the son, the oldest son, and give him the responsibility of taking care of the family and the family's responsibilities. So Isaac tells Esau to go and hunt and to bring him game that he may eat it and give Esau the blessing of the firstborn. Now, in true dysfunction, Rebekah overhears the plan that Isaac has to give Esau the blessing, and she makes the plan otherwise. In chapter 27, 6 through 7, it says, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, I heard your father speak to your brother Esau. Bring me game and prepare for me delicious food that I may eat it and bless you before the Lord before I die. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice as I command you. Go to the flock, bring me two good young goats so that I might prepare for them a delicious food for your father, such as he loves, and you shall bring it to your father and eat so that he may bless you before he dies. Now, it's possible that Rebekah had the best intentions to bless Jacob instead of Esau, because God told her when she was pregnant that the older was going to serve the younger. But unfortunately, the deception brings more harm, brings more chaos to the family dynamic. So Jacob, what's he do? He goes along with his mother's plan. He deceives his father into giving him the blessing over his brother. Now we see the trauma that's left by this deception. And in verse 35, it says, but he, Isaac, said, your brother came deceitfully, and he has taken away your blessing. Esau said, is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has cheated me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, he has taken away my blessing. Then he said, have you not reserved a blessing for me? And Isaac said to Esau, behold, I have made him Lord over you, and all of his brothers I have given to him for servants. And with grain and wine I have sustained him. What then can I do for you, my son? Clearly, Esau had reason to hate Jacob, and he did, and he proposes to kill Jacob. So in the midst of this, Jacob is forced to flee, and he never sees his mother again. Now God, always having a plan, Jacob is on his way to see his uncle and stay with his uncle, because that's what his parents told him to do. They said, flee and go see your uncle. So Jacob is on the way to see his uncle, and Jacob would have known the promises that God made to his grandfather and the promises of his father Isaac. And God said that I'm going to bring you into the promised land, and I'm going to make you into a great nation. He would also have known that God, their God, was different from all of the other gods of their neighbors and the other families may have worshipped. But Jacob, while fleeing his brother, has his own dream and encounters God. So in Genesis 28, verse 10, it says, Jacob left Beersheba and went towards Haran. He came to a certain place and stayed there that night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones of that place, he put it under his head and lay down in that place to sleep. He dreamed, and behold, there was a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached heaven. And behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord, the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I give to you and your offspring. Your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And in you and your offspring shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Behold, I am with you, and I keep you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. Then Jacob awoke, and he said, "How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven." So early in the morning, Jacob took a stone that he had put under his head, and he set it up for a pillar, and he poured oil on it, and he called the place, name of the place, Bethel. But the name of the city was Luz at first. So Jacob made a vow, saying, "If God will be with me and keep me in this way that I go, I will give and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear, so that I will come again into my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. And this stone in which I have set up as a pillar shall be God's house. And all that I give, in all that you give me, I will give you a full tenth." So can we possibly call this Jacob's conversion moment, when he actually meets God for the first time? How many of us long for an interaction like this with God? To be fully embraced in speech, God speaking directly to us. But isn't it interesting that the vow that Jacob makes in verses 20 through 22 is only at arm's length? We'll put it on the screen. You read it again. It basically says, if God takes care of me, then I'll follow you. But how many of us start our Christian journey the same way? We take a small step of faith, believing in God, but at the same time, we do it at arm's length because we're not quite sure if God's going to do what he says he's going to do. I love how even in Jacob's give and take attitude, that he takes a step to follow God, and we know God that is so merciful that he takes care of Jacob even through his mistakes. So after this encounter, Jacob makes it through the desert. He makes it to his uncle's house where he meets Rachel. It's love at first sight, and Jacob makes a deal with Laban, his uncle, to work for 7 years in order to marry Rachel. Jacob is deceived by Laban and instead given Rachel's older sister to marry, which makes Jacob angry. So he works another 7 years to marry Rachel. Now, Jacob may have gotten a taste of his own medicine in this deception, and maybe he felt a little bit what it was like to be deceived. But in the midst of it all, God's still blessing him. Jacob spends 14 years working for his two marriages, and then he spends 6 more years with his uncle building a herd of sheep and cattle, in which he may have done some sketchy things in taking advantage of his uncle in breeding the stronger animals for himself. But at this point, God tells Jacob to leave and go back. After 20 years of being with his uncle, he says, "I want you to go back to your father's house." But in the midst of Jacob making all of these decisions on his own, in leaving, the relationship with his uncle is so fractured that they have to make a covenant that they will never hurt each other again. Now Jacob has to leave his uncle, in whom clearly they don't have a good relationship. And now he has to go relive his past. And he knows in the midst of going home, he's going to have to meet with his brother Esau. And he's afraid. So in Genesis 32, 9 through 12, Jacob prays. And Jacob said, "Oh God, the God of my father Abraham and my father Isaac, O Lord, who said to me, 'Return to your country and to your kindred, that I may do you good. I am not worthy of the least of all the deeds of steadfast love and all the faithfulness that you have shown to your servant, for with only my staff I crossed this Jordan. And now I have become two camps. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, that he may come and attack me, the mothers with the children. But you said, I will surely do you good. I will make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So Jacob knows that he wronged his brother, and he's afraid of the consequences. How many times do we make decisions that we know were a mistake, and we try to run away from the consequences as well? But the beauty of Jacob is that he knows that God has taken care of him this far, and he prays that God would have mercy on him for his past mistakes. But the part that brings me a little bit of solace in Jacob still not quite getting it is he divides his camp, and he puts the most love at the back of the line and a bunch of gifts and his least favorite people at the front of the line, so that when his brother meets his group, if he starts killing people, the favorite people are going to be in the back. He's still hedging his bets. He's still putting what he loves most at the end. How often do we do the same thing? But Jacob, guess what? He faces his fear, and he does it anyway, and he meets his brother face to face. And it turns out Esau doesn't mean him any harm. How often do we do the same thing, where we do everything in our power to protect ourselves and what we love, but we don't always give God the chance to do it for us? Or maybe we do it all on our own and we give God, well, if my way doesn't work, then you're going to have to come through for me. There's so many more stories of Jacob, and we don't have that much time. Good, bad, but in the midst of it all, God still blesses him. God is with Jacob the whole time. In the light of all of his mistakes, the heartbreak, God is always there. Faith is being afraid to do something that God tells us to do and doing it anyway. How many times did God tell Jacob to do something, and he did it, even when he was afraid? I want you to go back. I want you to read this story again, read through the life of Jacob. I want you to see how God moves in his life, and how even when Jacob messes up, God's always there. It shows me that when we make decisions that we think are best, but they don't necessarily align with God's way, it's going to bring dysfunction. But when we put God first and he goes before us, we're still going to make mistakes. But even in the mistakes, God's going to be with us. So Jacob clearly did not have a good time. Now, whether that was his fault or his circumstances or all of the above, it's interesting to look at Jacob's life and see how he made decisions and analyze why he did what he did. So early in his life, it looks like he was heavily influenced by his mother, thereby cheating his brother out of the blessing. How much was he influencing himself when he traded soup for his brother's birthright? We don't know. The law of Moses wasn't written for another 400 years, so we don't know if he had any rules written down that he would have known what was right and wrong. But we do know that all of us have a conscience, and that this may have been telling him it was wrong. But what else may have been influencing Jacob? How much emphasis do we put in our name? Now, in Jewish culture, a name meant a lot. The meaning of your name followed you in your life. Jacob's name meant to follow or to supplant. Did Jacob believe that this was his identity, that this is who he was, and that in order to be successful, to not to live up to his name, he had to cheat and do whatever was necessary to fulfill what God told him he would be. I mean, you look at his grandfather, Abraham. Abraham means father of many nations. And as we talked about last week, Abraham didn't have any kids until he was 99. How would you feel being the father of many nations and the humiliation of not having any children? The humiliation of your name being Jacob and always be known as second best, as the heel catcher. But you're told that you're going to lead your family and you're going to be in charge. But if you take on the identity of being second best, it makes sense that he tried to do it himself. I think he believed he needed to cheat and lie in order to accomplish God's promises in his life. But I believe God deals with this directly later on in his story. In the midst of him going to see Esau, he sends his family out ahead. Jacob is by himself after he sends his family across the river. So we hear this really odd story in Genesis 32 where Jacob is alone and he's literally wrestling with a man that he calls God. Scholars likely say that this was possibly the pre-incarnate Christ. Was it an angel? Jacob calls him God. And in the midst of this struggle, God gives Jacob a new name. That name is Israel. What does Israel mean? Israel means God strives with, or God prevails. Why'd God change his name? Is it because Jacob always felt like he was second best and that he was never going to measure up? So this was God's way of teaching Jacob a lesson of, you don't have to do everything in your own power. Follow my principles, and I will prevail for you. The bottom line is that we're responsible to analyze how we live and how we do our lives according to God's will. But we're going to see stories throughout the entire Bible of great men and women who are supposed to be great godly people, and man, they make a ton of mistakes. I believe Jacob was one of those guys, and that the greatest lesson in his life that he can teach us is to never give up searching for God, never stop asking God for help, and to always seek blessing from God. That even in the midst of him trying to get ahead, he never forgot the promises that God gave him. And he also never quit seeking God, even when he messed up. What's it look like to know God like Jacob knew God? How did his life reflect the godly man that Hebrews 11 categorizes him as? He kept seeking, he kept listening, he kept asking. So the sermon series is based in Hebrews 11. We've talked a lot about Jacob, but why did he make it into Hebrews 11? Hebrews 11 only mentions him very short. It's a snippet. And it's only a blessing that his father gives him, and then a blessing that he gives to his children. But I think the thing that it shows us is that he never lost faith throughout his whole life. Hebrews 11 verse 20 says, by faith, Isaac invoked future blessings on Jacob and Esau, and by faith, Jacob, when dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph, bowing in worship over the head of his staff. The hall of faith does not mean getting everything right the first time, but believing what God said and striving to live by faith is what gets you into the hall. I believe that when Jacob had that first experience with the God of his fathers, he knew God was the real deal. And we see the rest of his life full of mistakes, but he never forgot the promises. And we continually see God speaking to Jacob in the midst of all of it. How do we do that? How do we know Jacob like, how do we know God like Jacob knew God? I think it's very reassuring to see a man like Jacob for my own walk, because it gives me hope that even in my mistakes, my screw-ups, that God is still there. He's always there. The other part is, I'm so thankful that this isn't an overnight thing, because it took Jacob 149 years to figure this out. 149 years old when Jacob died. This took his entire lifetime of mistakes to finally getting to the point of where he trusted God. We need to continue to fight to know God and what his will is in our lives. And he's going to lead us in the direction that we need to go. I love this quote from Tim Keller, because it says, "Helplessness, not holiness, is the first step to accessing the presence of God." We do not have to have our lives figured out to know God or to follow God. He calls us where we are right now, even in the midst of any mistake you're in. And Jacob's story demonstrates how slow of a walk this is going to be. So don't lose heart. It's going to be a slow walk. But put your trust in him. Isn't it great to see a man as flawed as Jacob, continually chased by God and shown grace into constantly making his own decisions? And God always kept his promises, even the promises that he didn't necessarily see, God still kept them. Because God knew Jacob's heart. And God knows your heart. And God's patient with us. How grateful we should be that even in our own rebellion and selfish decisions, he's patient. And he'll show himself throughout our lives. He won't give up on us. We are never too far gone, and we are never too old to be used by God and his kingdom. If we're going to learn from a man like Jacob, we need to see that the mistakes in his life, they're not the end all. The mistakes in your life, they don't define you. They're rules. The Bible gave us rules. But we're all going to make mistakes. But we can strive to make fewer. Remember the promises of God. Remember, like Jacob did, the promises that he made to him. What motivates us to be Christians? Why do you serve, and why do you try to make a difference one person at a time? Are we doing it out of obligation because we feel like we have to? Are we doing it out of fear of disappointing God? If I don't do a good enough job, God's going to be mad? Let's reach the world for Jesus, because we know that God is with us every single day, all the time, and that he's cheering us on to bring more people into the kingdom. If we don't know why we're doing what we're doing, we need to find out. Get into the Word. What does it say? What does God promise us? We know what God promised Jacob. What did he promise us? There's so many promises throughout the Bible for us. I picked a few, but everybody knows this verse. It is the most famous verse in Christianity. John 3:16. "For God so loved the world, he gave his only son, so that we would have eternal life." Promise. James 1:5. "If anyone lacks wisdom, ask God, for he gives generously." Philippians 4:6-7. "Through prayer, make your requests known to God, and peace will guard your heart. Peace. Romans 8:32. He who did not spare his own son, how will he not also give us all things? Now, I paraphrase these a little bit, but every promise is going to mean something a little different to everybody. We have the responsibility ourselves of getting into the Bible, finding out what the promises of God are, and how that pushes us through our life. What is God telling you? What promises do you need to hear? I can't give it to you. Only God can give that to you. Dig into them. Figure out where they apply in your life. These are just a couple. We can be like Jacob and know God. That's going to take time and it's going to take work. Now, in life, like golf, we have to play by the rules. The rules have been set down by God in this beautiful book that we have called the Bible. But unfortunately, being sinners and falling short of the glory of God, like Jacob, we make a lot of mistakes. But also like Jacob, God allows our mistakes to be redeemed by the blood of Christ as we continue on this journey with all the penalties that we add to our score because of our mistakes. At some point, we're going to get to the end, like Jacob. And like a good father or a good golf partner, he might even give us a few mulligans or do-overs along the way. So we're going to go into communion. If you guys forgot to grab a cup, raise your hand. Somebody will find you to give you one. But I want to reiterate how our relationship with God was enabled by the cross. The tearing of the curtain, as we read the New Testament, all happened because of what Christ did on the cross. We can now speak directly with the Creator of the universe because of what Christ did for us. There is no barrier, just Christ. Follow Christ. Do we understand how big of a deal this is? That we get to talk to the Creator. And as we go into communion, I want you to remember that when you're praying, who you're speaking to. You're speaking to the Creator. Go into it with reverence and honor, speaking to God, but also as a Father who loves you. Now, before we take the elements, that remembering again that Christ did this so that we would be right before Him. And I want you to thank God and ask Him, is there anything in your life that's keeping you from relationship with Him? And ask Him to help you to know Him like Jacob